Well, a very good evening to you out there, and thanks for tuning in this Monday evening here on Terrace Talk, coming to you, as it always does, live from our studio here in Tralee. And tonight's show, well, it's a busy one. We've given Liam and John the chance to sit out tonight, ahead of their long trip to Navan, of course, next weekend, and they'll be back with all the information on that, of course. And I suppose it's nice maybe to relax and have a show this evening with a lot of great interviews lined up, actually. Maybe a little bit of a break from our normal show. In the second hour, we will turn the show over to women's soccer, of course. Ramona she'll join us as they look ahead to the women's social soccer in Kerry out there in Finnis, and then it's the preview of the Gaynor Cup. It's hard to believe it's that time of year already, as Kerry go in search of All-Ireland glory once more, and really looking forward to that, where we get a chance to chat to the players, of course, and the management. And there's also great insight into the planning and the preparations and the excitement and even the new gear, and we'll be talking to them all between 7 and 8 o'clock this evening. Now, did you hear about the Narry who won the Derby? Well, strange as it sounds, it's all true, and Stephen Fernand will share some great stories and insights into the life of Bernard Dillon. The topic, of course, his new book, all that around maybe 6:40. Keen Horgan, another Kerry man making the headlines at international level. And we'll chat to the Listowel man following his national selection for the Irish Wheelchair Rugby League World Cup. And he'll be joined, of course, as well, hopefully on the line by the Irish national manager, Damien McCabe, and all that around 6:20 this evening as well. And, of course, it was a very good week, of course, for the small ball in Kerry. Kerry Camogie side, of course, recorded a massive victory over Antrim in the opening round of their intermediate championship. And the Kerry senior hurlers, of course, secured third spot in the end in the Joe McDonough with a comfortable enough final round victory over Mead. It was a win, I suppose, that saw them end up with three wins from the campaign, as Laois and Offaly, of course, took top spots, and they'll play each other, of course, in the final. And we also have a special interview this evening, looking back at the romance of the game. I suppose many times in Kerry we look at it and we win a Munster title and we kind of forget about it. So we look through the eyes of a Longford GAA supporter, and particularly their fantastic historic win over Dublin in the Leinster Minor Championship, and maybe they might shed a bit of a light on the, I suppose, the art of the romance of the underdog, maybe something that we've forgot about here in Kerry. Now, back to the Mead game, of course, and after the game, Stephen Mullumphy, the Kerry manager, announced that it was time up as manager of the Kerry senior hurlers. Having been there for 3 years, it's amazing how fast the seasons move along. And afterwards, he admitted he absolutely loved every single minute of it. And I'm delighted to have on the line, I suppose now, former Kerry senior hurling manager, Stephen Mullumphy. Absolutely loved every single minute of it, Stephen. Still feeling that way this morning?
No, I am. You know, it's strange. Normally you're planning for the training session the next week. What drills? We're talking to the players, what we're focusing on. The new year video analysis, getting ready. It's strange not having, I suppose, that to look forward to. Actually, just even thinking, you know what, I'm looking forward to the Kerry Senior Hurling Championship. Normally you're going looking for talent and seeing who's stepping up, but do you want to be nice, maybe just to go to these games now? I suppose I'm not have anything on the line and just watch the players in action. But no, I did. I thought it was fantastic. It's very much an extension of our job. We work in teams in the military. It's all about the team. But no, look, three very fast years, they've been very quick, but again, it wasn't my plan to go, but
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe just shed a small bit of light on that. Obviously, I mean, you said after the interview yesterday that you'd have loved to stay, but obviously to the employment and the whole lot. And of course, you are a military man, of course. And obviously, I suppose sometimes your job kind of is the main thing, and it focuses you in that direction. And this is the particular case in this instance, isn't it?
It is. We all, I suppose, the three services, the Army, Air Corps and the Navy, that we all go overseas at certain times, kind of in our contracts to do it every 3 or 4 or 5 years. And it's a fair system. If you don't go for a while, then your name comes up in lights and you maybe get an opportunity to go now or next year. And I think maybe I used up that. It was my time now, basically, to go. And it's fine. This one is a lot different. Before it would have been Syria, Chad, Lebanon. This one actually is to Brussels. To the EU military, so very much a desk job for once, as opposed to being outside. But look, the only good side of it is that the family get to come. So 12 months. Again, we'll be tying with the EU military a lot, and there's a lot more appointments out there. So it's something new, it's something different. As I said, the kids, you know, we live in the sticks of West Waterford here. There's not too many houses around us, but now moving to Brussels City, it'll be a nice change. But you know what, an opportunity for the kids as well to see what's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all part and parcel. But of course, you can peck the Hurleys and the jerseys, and it is Brussels. You get home quick enough as well in a hurry if you need to be. Come here, let's look back at the 3 years. I mean, I tried to jot together some of the highlights. I mean, that Joe Mack final, obviously. I penciled in the Munster League win over Tip myself. I thought that was kind of one of those achievements. An awful lot of new players giving their debuts by you over the course of the year. The third place finish, of course, this year, particularly in a year that was kind of difficult enough. I mean, obviously during the league we were saying, God, where are we going? Into everything is difficult, and then to kind of turn it on and turn it around maybe as well through the championship, particularly with a younger team, a team kind of maybe finding their way in the championship as well. There seems to be a lot to pick out there, I would imagine. What were some of your best bits, or maybe some of the highlights, maybe not on that list maybe?
One of the best highlights for myself and management, Brendan Sullivan, Pat and Shane Briggs, it was bringing in new players, and basically you see the talent they have, and they, as I keep saying with the Kerry senior hurlers, they don't back themselves enough, and the skill base they have compared to others in other counties, they back themselves without thinking it, was just getting that confidence. And I think definitely the highlights would, like even one there, Kyle O'Connor, I mean, we asked him in after our 20s, I think 3 years ago, and he came in for the last 6 weeks, saw the Joe Mack in the final, which we lost by a point, but the following year he came back, he went gymming straight after that, he came back in, he got stronger, bigger, faster, his motivation, and then see him make his debut, I think it was the Munster League game at cornerback, and ended up getting a point in that game. Like, I just seen that we love that, we love to see, I suppose, the players starting to realise, yeah, do you know what, I can make this, I am an elite athlete. And so moments of that are what we look back on, and even this year, I suppose, I was talking to Luke Crowley, guys, going to a junior game, watching them win, and then seeing the talent he has, and then so seeing that come out then, and this year in the championship of all places, especially the Westmead game, they're the highlights when you look back and you think, yeah, look, you know what, we're in a good place here and a good place going forward.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that's the other side of senior management. Of course, a lot of people think it's about winning cups and the whole lot, but it's about the development of the players and bringing them from maybe some place to another place and bringing them to a better place, possibly even in their own development. When you kind of, as an outsider, and use that word in inverted commas, came into Kerry, and had you kind of a perception of what you were stepping into, or maybe had you a knowledge already of what you were heading into?
No, I knew some of the names. Growing up playing Kerry hurlers, just like the hardest guys you'd ever get in a pitch. But you said the same where you break concrete blocks off them and they just keep smiling at you. So I knew straight away, like, they were tough men going inside, and they didn't, like, they train hard. They train like a tier one team, which you're delighted. I suppose, you know, I didn't know maybe it's transition of players, and that's something, you know, and that's really different. If you just get, you know, even our third year with new players in, while other guys have been in since first year, and you could see their character, their shape, even the way they look. The guys that worked for the 3 years, that's they're born leaders. They look Eric Lean, Evan Murphy, just Michael Lean, just guys down the job, Dahi Griffin, guys who are with it. When you have new guys come in, that's the only, I suppose, slight difficulty. But no, to be honest, everything came down, the guys that came in and the commitment they made. I think anything we pushed them, we pushed the limits, they only wanted more of it. And the more the harder you suppose we trained, you wanted more, and they enjoyed it. And you mentioned about managers. Yes, to answer, the primary effort for a manager is to win silverware. I suppose that's the one thing I am maybe disappointed with, not getting over the line. I suppose when you realise how close we came the first year, I thought second year we'd go, we'd definitely cross it, even this year. But you want development is good. What I like most, even looking back at the highlight, was linking him with the underage. With the under-15s, we did a lot. With the minors, we did a lot under Jerome. And they're in a good place. Like, they're looking forward. They're a fast fit and they're attacking team. It was great to see that. We had come one joint session. I think, you know what, I remember, I think we had an under-15 session. At the end, we just linked up all the senior players and under-15s, and we just spoke about, this is where we're going to see you in a couple of years, in here. You need to be in a gym, you need to be walking now, and you'll be the next, say, Evan Murphy there. But I say that because I remember, after the training session, Evan was walking off the pitch, and he said to one of the other players, it was an earshot, he said, you know what, I wish I had that when I was 15 or 16, just to show what's ahead. So, I like that. I like that we have those maybe teams in place where the kids see where we want them to be in a couple of years. And no, it's good. Like, there's guys there stepping up underage. They want to see what's ahead. And look, I keep saying it. And the culture is excellent. And no, look, you know what? I would love to come in now to the team and give another few years and see what we could achieve. But look, happy to have been there, at least being a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you were a big chapter in the history of it, to be fair, 3 years. I mean, I suppose, you know, the stability is a huge factor as well. Come here, what was your final chat like? I mean, when you found out, I know, 6 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, whatever it was, that you had to move on the whole lot, maybe you keep it under the hat or whatever, but the moment comes where you have to kind of break it to the players and explain to the players. Is that difficult then on your behalf, because you've invested kind of so much time and like you can name check the players, you know where they're coming from and you know where North Kerry and South Kerry is all of a sudden. Is that a difficult chat?
You know, it is. Like, it's because, you know what, if you're letting them down, and then you don't want to be leaving the team. And like, you're a family. And we talk about club teams are close to the family, and I'll never replicate what a club team are, because they're, you know, they're cousins, they live close. But we very much had a very family ethos, I think, in that. And anyone who came in and bought into it, they certainly felt like that. And I think the new players this year were the ones that came back and they said that. But no, our final, we had a routine from what, the first year in charge. At the end, we just give out a few awards to the players, like best young player under 21, just acknowledge that. Best player we picked, the management. Then there's the player's best player. We have a leadership award and just the Tom Crean one, and because basically that's the role model we used, anyone more ideal. We just gave those out, and what we did this year was the third year, I suppose, and I was just thinking in the back of my head, we got the former players from the previous year to present it to the new guy, and it was excellent to see Kyle O'Connor now present it to Ronan Welsh, or even Shane Conway present it to Dan Goggin. Just small things, I'd seen that, and we're just creating a bit of, I suppose, lineage or a bit of tradition, but it is difficult. Waking up the next day realising, you know, there's no training next week or there's no match, and the good thing for the players is they have the club championship to look forward to, and they're straight back in. And look, the county player was only a club player on loan, and very much like when you get your county players back, it raises the standard. And we've said it from day one, actually the last 2 years, I didn't say it last Saturday, is we expect to see them shining in the club games, whether it be man marked, of course, and the whole lot, but we want to see the guys standing out, basically they're county stars. But yeah, it was difficult, it was different. We go around the room, so it's Tygo Donovan, who's our performance coach, and everyone had to give a highlight of something they had with the year. And John, it was excellent. Just going around the room, hearing everyone, from guys making their debut that day, like Derek Carney, or more senior players, what to focus on next year and where we need to go. It was excellent. It's very important, I suppose, how you leave an organisation, or then how you leave a team, how you leave any family you're with. And, well, I think we got it right, but it's still strange to see that there's no training this week, or we've no match analysis to do next Wednesday night.
You never know. Sure, you get in the car some evening and just drive down to Tralee for the laugh. Sure, you never know. You could do that. Listen, Stephen, look, on my own behalf here, and behalf of the show here in Terrace Talk, I want to wish you the very best to look in your new role, of course. Army is very important, absolutely. Look, you've always been very accommodating to us for interviews here in Terrace Talk, something which is rare enough with senior managers, believe me. And listen, we wish you the very best to look. And sure, you never know. I mean, time flies around fairly quickly again. A year isn't that long either. And if it's the case that you ever did head back down the kingdom, you'd be most welcome, and you're a fine fella to deal with all the times, and we wish you the very best of luck and your family, and hopefully you'll have an exciting time out in Brussels. You never know, like I said, it's a long way from the West Waterford to Brussels, but you never know. They have good sprouts, somebody told me.
Good morning for that again. I was just mentioning the hurling.
Absolutely. Slánanish, Stephen Malumphy. We'll take a quick break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home. From the sidelines to the stand, Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now, have we lost the art of celebrating notable wins here in the Kingdom? This year, of course, we wrapped up the Munster titles at senior, under 20, minor level, as well as a clean sweep in the ladies Munster senior, minor and under 16 and under 14 championship as well. And yet it feels like we didn't really go out of our way to kind of soak up those achievements, or maybe honour them in any special way. So what's it like to have that kind of romantic moment, I suppose, as the underdog taking out a big gun and maybe wait a lifetime to do so? Well, my next guest is a man who knows all about that, especially the waiting part anyway, and he also knows an awful lot about winning as well. My next guest is Martin Skilley, of course, former Longford GAA chairman, former Leinster president, and also candidate for the GAA presidency as well a number of years ago, and a man who has a few Kerry connections as well. We might delve into those as well. Martin, delighted that you could take a little bit of time out this evening. Are you still celebrating that Leinster minor win, or even like all good teams, are you concentrating on the next round?
To be quite honest, we're on a high since last Monday night. It was one of those magical nights in Tullamore, you know, there were a couple of question marks in our head. Why on a Monday night? Why Tullamore? But believe you me, when the final whistle went after extra time in Tullamore, nobody cared where they were or what it was. You know, like, we had got over, I suppose, you know, the prince of teams, you know, Dublin in the Leinster Minor Championship final. And, you know, it took a long time for the Longford people. They were just glued to me in there. It was a very, very special night. And one, I suppose, that was well deserved by just a magnificent Longford team that who gave everything, not only heart and commitment, but no small amount of skill as well. And it was one of those glorious nights that you live for in the GAA. And there's a saying, seldom is wonderful, and that was just a wonderful night for Longford GAA people.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's funny because that Tuesday morning, I can guarantee you, Martin, there was more people in Kerry talking about, did you see Longford last night? Did you see the win? Did you see that? Did you see it? And it kind of came down a couple of years ago as well. Sligo kind of pulled a fast one as well at one stage. And, you know, people talk about it. So GAA people support the underdog. I mean, at times we put every kind of roadblock in front of them to make sure they can't probably progress as quickly as other fellas. But when they get the breakthrough, there is a genuine sense of, well done, fair play, maybe a sense of curiosity, as in, God, you know, how did this happen? Why did it happen now? And of course, this Longford team, this is the second time this year they beat Dublin, so I suppose maybe we missed the first chapter of that story.
Yeah, well, talking to my friends in sort of Leitrim and Roscommon, where we would have actually huge rivalry, but, you know, there were people watching it in the pubs and, you know, restaurants and around the establishments around the place, and the general consensus was, as the game went on, people began to think, hey, you know, Longford can actually win this game. And when the final whistle went, you would have to, I'm reliably told that there were big cheers in places like Rooski in Roscommon and Drummond in Leitrim, and where normally they'd be baying for our blood. But, you know, it really went down well. And you know, how did it start? You know, we bet awfully in the first round of the Leinster Championship. You know, went to the Faithful Fields and had a good win down there that night. And then obviously the big test came against Dublin in the second round. And that night we played Dublin off the field, won by 5 points. And obviously at that stage had poked the bear. We lost to Leash in our final qualifier, but we had already qualified as the top team in the group. We came against a very, very good Loud team in the Leinster semi-final, and it was only in the last couple of minutes that we got in front. And but it was the resilience of that Longford team on that night against Loud. Loud were in command for long parts of the game, but Longford never threw in the towel, and, you know, kept at it, and eventually got the scores that. And, you know, obviously then Leinster final night comes around. We go down to Tullamore, as I say, wondering have we poked the bear now, and are we really going to feel the backlash from that? And after 5 minutes, Dublin did get a goal, and you know, I suppose the doubters would have started to say, oh, here we go, you know. But there were 4 points in it at half-time. Longford hung in, didn't play very well, but Longford got the first couple of points in the second half, and then, you know, the game really took off, and both sides just gave it everything. You know, it was end-to-end, and you know, we got the equalising score. You know, our centre-half back, he stood back and kicked a free from, I don't know, 50, 55 yards out to equalise the game. And then we had a couple of chances to actually go and win it. But the final whistle came, and the game then was due for extra time. Normally, the stronger counties would have the advantage with the deeper bench. But believe you me, our fellas gave everything. And at the end of the game, we were just flying, and we won it by 2 points. And scenes like it. I suppose the last time I was in Tullamore and saw scenes like that was when Mullinyachta led Colmacud Crokes to win the Leinster Club Championship for Longford. So we've had a couple of very, very happy nights in Tullamore. You know, a wonderful, wonderful atmosphere, a wonderful ground. And overall, you know, the one thing that did surprise me, because it was a Monday night, was the huge Longford crowd that actually turned up on the night as well. And, you know, it took a long time for the presentation to take place, but those nights are special, and that's what makes the GEA special, Donald.
Absolutely. Come here to me. I was speaking to a friend of mine today, and I was saying, obviously people said, what's on Terrace Talk tonight? What's on Terrace Talk? And I said, John and Liam are taking a rest anyway. I have some fellow from Longford on, and normally you'd get, oh my God, Longford. And he says, ask him about Dizzy Barry, will you? Dizzy Barry is one of the greatest footballers ever. So for my friend who wants to know, Dizzy Barry, legend of Longford?
Absolutely. Dizzy Barry was one of the greatest footballers. He was a corner forward and played full forward. But he was just magical around the square. You know, you just couldn't hold him, you know, and Dizzy Barry would score 1-2-something, you know, 2-5, you know, just a regular occurrence. And he was like clockwork, you know, he never had an off day. He was one of the greatest forwards. I remember talking to him one night when I was involved with Longford and, you know, are you nervous about the match today? No, he says, I'm never nervous because I prepared well all week. Dizzy Barry would go up to the Longford Slashers ground every day during his lunch break, and he'd take 20, 40 frees, you know, and he was just, I suppose, maybe mechanical in how he prepared, a naturally gifted footballer that utilised all the talents that God gave him, and he was just an absolutely wonderful player. And look, you'd see him every weekend in Pierce Park. He still loves his game, loves his football. His daughter now is playing for Longford Ladies, and you know, a chip of the old block now. So Desi is well and hearty, so you can tell your listener he's very, very good form.
Absolutely. And of course, we didn't get a chance to talk about 1968. You know that, of course, Longford got out in 68, played Kerry in the semi-final, Kerry beaten by 2 points, and of course went down to Down. Were you around in, can you remember the 68 game?
I was a very, very small boy, and Kerry did break our hearts.
In a game that Mico Dwyer told me one time that Longford could have won.
Yeah, well, we were 9 or 10 points down at halftime. You know, had a terrible first half. Second half, we actually took the game to Kerry. And with a couple of minutes to go, we actually took the lead. A penalty by Jackie Devine. And as the saying goes, he shook the rigging. And so the whole of Longford and maybe the whole of Ireland actually exploded because, you know, we, as being underdogs, we would have had a lot of people. But in fairness, the great Brendan Lynch and Eamon O'Donoghue, they kicked 2 or 3 superb points in the last couple of minutes to break our heart. But we were so close that time. We had a wonderful team. They won the National Football League in 1966. They bet the great Galway team in that final 9-point stage. And, you know, as a young fella, I thought that was going to be the norm for Longford, that they were going to be up there in Croke Park the whole time. But I was to find out since that's not the case. Just, can I say something about maybe the work that has been done in Longford at underage, Donald? You know, over the last 20 years, Longford have actually won 3 Leinster titles. And 2002, 2010, and again, I had the opportunity to present them at the Cup in 2010 as Leinster Vice Chairman. And obviously last night. And I just want to mention a Kerry man that might have had a slight role. Dick O'Sullivan, proud Kerry man, Kerry co-op, and then Punchestown Racecourse. He persuaded us, and along with myself and John Bannon and a couple of others, to run a fundraiser in Punchestown. And we've been doing that ever since. And that fundraiser has generated over €2 million for Longford GEA. And obviously, all of that money goes into the underage coaching scheme. So there's a Kerry angle for you in the Longford success.
Poor old Dick O'Sullivan. When he was down here in Kerry, the U7, starting the Donkey Derby in the Roses 3 years ago. Fair play. Come here, listen, Martin, we could talk all night. The very best to look. You never know. Kerry and Westmeath, says I. Longford can cross paths again. Roscommon are hanging in there. Of course, you're playing the losers of Armagh and Derry. Mayo and Cork are hanging around as well. And sure, you never know. The Dubs might come around again in a semi-final for you. But listen, we wish you the very best to look. That, of course, was Martin Skelly, a man of many mantles and many parts, and a great Longford supporter as well. Now I've been joined in studio by Keane Horgan. Horgan or Hogan?
Horrigan.
He's a prop. Oh, Horrigan. All right, yeah. Well, 2-0 nearly, absolutely. And of course, he joins us because we're talking about wheelchair rugby. And of course, I met you a couple of years ago because you were a hurler at that stage inside the wheelchair, and you've gone on to the real stuff now, rugby now. And of course, the first international wheelchair rugby league match in Ireland will take place, of course, on the 8th of June. And Ireland will host, I suppose, the Wheelchair Rugby League World Cup on home soil, I suppose, for the first time. And among the 10 strong squad includes a young Kerryman, Keane Horgan. Young? How young?
19.
That's fairly young, isn't it?
Is it?
Absolutely. Come here, before we talk about the rugby and getting it, chart your pathway into here, because as I said, last time you were in the wheelchair with Davy Fitz shouting at you on the sideline, you've gone international now at this stage.
Yeah, so I started out playing basketball, still playing it, but then I joined the hurling. Still doing bowling, but then last year I joined the rugby. And so we're still doing all three of them. Plodding away with all three of them.
Oh my God, you'd be a busy man. And and of course it is wheelchair. I mean, spina bifida, could you explain about spina bifida to people?
So when I was born, I had a little gap in my back. My back wasn't fully formed. So when they operated to close it, there was still too much fluid being pumped around my body, so they had to put a tube from my brain, opening my brain into my stomach to drain all the fluid from my brain. But when they had to close my back, they had to do a few other things, so that's how I ended up in a wheelchair.
Wow. And growing up, because obviously you're 19, you're still growing up, of course, I mean, do you find that difficult, or is it just something we kind of accept and we kind of move on and you look at the positives and you head for the sporting side?
I suppose you don't really have a choice, really, only to look at the positive side of it, because you can't really let it hold you back in life, because you'll get nowhere. So sport really has been the main thing to help me stay positive about it. Finding all the other people and sharing stories with them as well. But yeah, sport has been a major impact as well.
And when you go home then, of course, and your pals and the whole lot, and they're saying, God, there's Keane Horgan, he's heading off now in international rugby, and he's done the basketball bit and he's done the hurling bit and the whole lot. It does give you a kind of a different kind of social life, maybe, outside what you would have had, maybe.
Oh yeah, it does, yeah. Like, you'll have more. They can actually understand more that there's not just the wheelchair there, that you actually can do stuff.
Yeah. So, do you get that a lot? Do people say, wheelchair, and they kind of like move on or talk about the weather?
Yeah, they do. Some people do, yeah.
Yeah. But then, like, you're not Keane Horgan, the guy in the wheelchair, you're Keane Horgan, the international athlete at this stage and the whole lot. So when you got the news, basically, from Damien saying, do you want to play with us on the thing, what was that like?
Ah, it was great, you know. I went with trials there a couple of weeks ago over in England, but I didn't actually know places are tough for spots, you know, so I didn't really know, but we gave him my all, and then it was like grand, and he said we'd be in contact, so wait, and then a couple of weeks and I got the phone call.
So he finally rang you?
He did.
He gave you the good news. Damien, when you gave the good news to Keane, what was that like?
I didn't actually give him the news. It was our coach,
all right,
Roberts, that actually gave him the news. But having done that to players in the past, I know it would have been a good feeling. Because I've coached a team in the past, and you've had to leave people out, and the ones who you get selected, there's always a little buzz in the air and a little twinkle in the eye. You know, it's a nice experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, particularly giving it to maybe somebody for the first time, maybe kind of your debut, and you're getting into that circle as well. Come here, Damien, explain a bit to us, Wheelchair Rugby League. I looked at the video, God, yourselves in Spain went ahead really hammer and tongs on what you sent through to us. For all the world, it's rugby in wheelchairs, but I mean, there is a few different things. There's a bit of tags, and there's some horrendous collisions in it that you kind of get up fairly quickly out of.
Yeah, there is. The tags is the way we make the tackles. It's we don't throw each other to the ground. We just take the tag off the shoulder. But it is also a contact sport. There's a lot of chair-on-chair contact. It makes quite a big bang. And when people see it for the first time, they're like, wow, you know, that's heavy stuff. But no, it's all good.
It's all good. And it bounced back. And of course, it's end-to-end, and you touched on for the try and the whole lot. The growth of the sport, Damien, over the last number of years, maybe?
Yeah, the growth is is going, it's time to get where we want to be, especially in Ireland, because, you know, a couple of years ago we didn't really have any players in Ireland playing. Now we've got about 8, 9, maybe 10. For the first time ever, on June the 8th, we're fielding a squad that is majority of people born and raised in Ireland. You know, the heritage players like myself in the past are now in the minority.
So now we're, I suppose, producing our own. And is that because when people kind of see, we discussed it with Keane as well, maybe just a couple of minutes ago, about Keane, the guy in the wheelchair. No, Keane's not the guy in the wheelchair. Keane's the guy who can play international rugby at this level. Is that happening because if we see more Keanes doing this, all of a sudden there's more players to pick from, there's more people saying, yeah, we could give this a go, you know, this could be of interest?
Oh, definitely. It definitely is that. That thing, you know, if you're someone in a wheelchair like yourself, many years ago I saw some guys playing wheelchair basket on a ball and thought, they can do that, why can't I do that? And you get involved. That's pretty much it, really.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's just around the corner. I mean, the 8th of June isn't too long away. That's as good. Well. Do you know who you're playing? You're obviously playing, is it Scotland and Wales? It's kind of a home nations tournament, is it?
Yes, called the Celtic Cup. It's played every year between ourselves and Scotland and Wales. And each year, one of the teams hosts it. This year, it's us.
Fair play.
It's the first time it's been played on Irish soil. It's very exciting times.
Keane, I presume you have all the minibuses and the coaches booked out of Listowel to head to Galway for the day, have you?
Sure, yeah.
What's it like? What's your family think of it? When you kind of bounced from hurling and said, God, I'm doing rugby this week. I mean, the first time they saw it, did they say, God, you could get really killed here?
Yeah. They were at the start, but then they realised, oh, you're well able, like, you know, you're well capable of doing this, but at the start, all right, they were like, oh, you could get killed in this, but the more they watched it, the more they realised, all right, yeah, it's not as bad as it looks.
Yeah, it's not too bad. And come here, I was watching, I mean, some of the movement off the ball as well. I mean, it's not just a case of five fellas in line throwing to each other. There's some kind of good moves where you kind of move in and out and pass it around the back as well as the guys who want to just bomb down the middle.
It's not all about just going, getting the ball and just driving straight through people. Sometimes you have to actually play it around, see what's the best option. Sometimes it is to try to go through, and then more times it's try to set up a play to go around people.
And how would you train for it? I mean, obviously, with the group here, I suppose, have you met them a couple of times before that you know the group and you've trained?
So we train once every couple of months. Mm-hmm. So it's split between Ireland and England because we've our players are still living in England. Mm-hmm. But no, we have trained a good few times together. We trained there about two, three weekends ago, mm-hmm. over in Liverpool. And that was our second or third time this year, training together. So we are well used to each other now at this stage.
Dear God. Do you have to milk in a few extra cows to pay for that, or how does it happen?
They're not. We plow with it. Yeah. Find something.
But if there was something out in Kerry there this evening and say, God, we might sponsor that old bus, or we might sponsor that, or I presume you wouldn't say no to that, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, because if I asked Damien that, he'd probably give me a bigger, longer list of what might be needed. But Damien, that's the other side of the coin as well. I mean, we're talking the professional rugby side, I mean, and you're trying to keep a sport on the tracks. Finance is hugely important.
Oh, it is. Yeah, there's nothing you can do without money. I mean, Kieran said we get together every couple of the months. We'd love it to be once a month. There's always more that you could do, but you've just got to go with what finances you have. As everybody knows in this world, it's difficult to come by, and all the sports are competing. But you do what you can do with what you have.
And you do the best you can. Keane, before we finish up, we talked about the tags and the length of the game. It's a long enough game, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's the same as the running sport, so it's 2 40-minute halves straight through. So.
And is that hard on you? I mean, obviously you're in a wheelchair and you're probably a lot more experienced than I would know, but I mean, it's go all the time. I mean, you're engaged for the whole lot of it, aren't you?
Oh, you are, yeah. It's constantly going, like, you know, so... Well, sometimes you are delighted that you have a good bench there as well, like, so that is the good thing about us. We have been strong as our starting team.
Yeah.
So, but it is tough going, all right. You're pushing for 80 minutes, like.
Yeah, it seems an awful lot of time to be pushing up and down, and you're taking collisions and you're taking tackles, and I suppose a few times you're maybe knocked out your chair as well, and you have to kind of get back up and the whole lot. When you've done your first training and you got knocked out with the chair, first of all, but I presume you probably had a bit of that with the hurling as well, had you?
Oh yeah, you have that as well with the hurling and basketball. Not as much in basketball, but you do have it the odd time in hurling, but not as much as rugby, but...
And the first time it happened to you, what was that like? When you got knocked out of the chair and you felt like saying, God, I shouldn't be knocked out of a wheelchair.
I shouldn't be, but it's all part of sport.
Get the ball and the whole lot. What's the nicest part about playing that team sport, all team sports, particularly as a wheelchair athlete?
What's the connection of, like, everyone there is kind of on the same board as you. So we all kind of understand each other in a way. And you make great friends out of electron. Mm-hmm.
And are those stories that you will share with another person in a wheelchair who has maybe, they're there in a different scenario, they might be an accident, they might be, like you said, spina bifida, they might be some other reason, but they're kind of, I'd imagine, unique to yourself and maybe very special.
Yeah, they're. You make girlfriends out of it as well, like, I'm sure. It's nice to hear other people's, what they've gone through as well, like, you know, great. Some people might be older than you, they could give you life experience or something like that, so it all depends really on the person, but...
And do they give you any bad habits?
No.
No?
No, surprisingly not.
Oh my God, Damien, you're not working hard enough if there's no bad habits. Come here, Damien. First of all, listen, thanks very much. I mean, it is absolutely fantastic to have a Kerry man on a national squad. We wish Keane the absolute best, and we wish you the very best as well. What are your hopes for the next two tough games, Scotland and Wales? What are they like?
Good sides.
Good sides.
Wales have been unbeaten now for about 8 or 9 years.
Okay.
But we've been getting closer to them every year, so we're hoping this year is the one we're going to turn them over, hopefully.
Right, we'll have to end Wales' 8 or 9 years anyway. And what of Scotland?
They're getting stronger all the time. We have managed to beat them the last few times we've played them, but they're getting stronger all the time, and we can't take anything for granted. I think there'll be three tough games, to be quite honest, on June the 8th.
Fantastic, absolutely.
Very competitive games.
And hopefully we'll have a massive North Kerry crowd up there as well, Keane. Huh?
Hopefully.
Absolutely. Listen, Keane, you're an absolute credit to the sport. You're a fantastic young man as well. And as you said, the chair doesn't define you. But if you don't win the next day, there'll be Kerry people giving out all over the place.
That's all right, too.
Huh? That's all right. You'll be a real sportsman then at that stage.
We'll try again next year.
Fair play. Keane, listen, Horgan, thanks very much. After a break, we'll talk to Stephen Fernan about the man around the corner from Rahilly's who won a horse race.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home. Breaking down the weekend sporting action, this is Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
No, did you ever hear of the Narry who won the Derby? That's the tagline, of course, of my next guest's new book, and of course, Kerryman journalist Stephen Fernan, of course, and it's being launched. It's called, of course, The Life and Times of Bernard Dillon, and it's, of course, being launched across around the corner there, in the home of the Blues, of course, on the 6th of June in the club, of course, and that's O'Rahilly's at 7 p.m. and we'll get to all more details on that. First of all, Stephen, maybe the question I asked you off here, when I saw the book, I was like, yeah, the tagline, the Narry who won Derby, obviously talk football straight away and the whole lot around the corner. Where did you find Bernard Dillon? I mean, it's a remarkable story, but it's one of those stories that kind of, I'd imagine, covered in dust that only family members probably knew about it, and he was somebody's granddad or whatever he was. How did you find out about it?
That's exactly what it was, Donal. I suppose my love of horse racing, anyway, was the first thing that put me onto him. I discovered it around 4 or 5 years ago that Tralee had won the Epsom Derby, which, in my opinion, after the Cheltenham Gold Cup, is the second biggest race, you know. So the more I kind of delved into his life, the more I saw what he had achieved, and it was quite remarkable. The Epsom Derby in 1910, the Grand Prix de Paris in 1906 was a fantastic race, the Cambridgeshire, the Jubilee Stakes, they were all massive races at the time. So I started to research him just out of interest to begin with, and of course the more I got into his life, then the more I started to see other things that weren't or you know, a bit untoward, you know. So he was a very charismatic character, but also very tragic and a very complex character as well, you know. He was from 1901 to 1911, I would say for 7 of those 10 years he was probably the best, if not the best, flat jockey in Edwardian England. Now, that was at a time when you had a lot of the great American riders like Denny Maher, who was his great rival, Todd Sloan. All these great American riders were coming into the English racing scene at the time. So for him to go over there at 13, 14, 15 and compete against these fellas, like, for people who understand racing, it was an epic achievement. Like, and he was the best of his time by far.
And how did he end up over there? I mean, obviously one day you're living down in Narryland, the next thing you're a jockey. Chart the journey from there to there.
Well, he was born in 1887 in Carolina, which, as you know, is in the heart of Stranraer territory, you know, not very far from where the clubhouse is and where the book will be launched. But his father, Patsy Dillon, was a fierce horseman. He was a great trainer, a local trainer, and his grandfather on his mother's side, Mary Flynn, his mother, her father was a horse trainer as well. So he had it on both sides, really. But his older brother, Joe Dillon, went to America, went to England in the late 1890s to a very famous stable in Salisbury, the Drool's Lodge Stables, it was called. It was the stable at the time for handicap horses, you know, and winning big races at big odds. But Bernard, like, from a young fella, had dreams of becoming a jockey, and he would canter his horses out Cockleshell Strand and out by the tide, out the bank, as we'd call it here in Tralee. So it was during that time that he was moulded to become a jockey. And in January 1901, he left Stranraer, literally outside where the clubhouse is, with a pair of short pants on in January 1901, at the age of 13, went to England with his older brother Joe, and within 3 to 4 years, he was just phenomenal. He was the talk of the sport in Britain and Ireland, and that's how it came about, you know. So he was meant to do it, definitely, you know, definitely. But from a young boy, like, the thing I like most about the book here, Donal, is that it brings in lots of landmarks that are still in Tralee today, as I said, Cockleshell and places like that. So there's very few people that walk the Strand would think, my God, an Epsom Derby winning jockey had dreams of becoming a jockey in this very spot. Like, it's an incredible story. Like, it really is.
Yeah. And of course, you mentioned the story, of course, and I suppose all stories, you know, they're long stories and the whole lot, and we'll go through maybe the rest of his life in a moment. But talk to me about his wife, Marie Lyde. I mean, she tends to be kind of a big character, particularly at the early stages.
Yeah, absolutely. Marie Lyde in Britain is still a very big name. She was a music hall artist in the late 18th. I mean, she bestraddled the Victorian, late Victorian period into the Edwardian period, and she would fill music halls right across England, South Africa, America, Australia. She was
I'm
massive.
I'm not saying she's a Spice Girl now, but there's a hint of Bix and Pasha.
Absolutely, yeah. And like, she was 18 years older than Bernard. So when they met, he was a famous jockey. She was a famous music hall artist. So they really were the hip couple. You know, they had everything that the media wanted. But they went to America. There's a fascinating chapter in the book. They went to America in 1913, where Mary was performing her concerts, and they were incarcerated in Ellis Island because they were unmarried, and they were, I think it was under the White Slave Law Act, I think, and they were arrested, incarcerated. But it's just, it's an incredible image to imagine two of the wealthiest and most popular people in Edwardian Britain at the time in Ellis Island with hundreds of immigrants who had just arrived from all over the world, you know. And I suppose I must say as well that Bernard wrote a memoir in 1922, which appeared in a lot of the British newspapers. And thankfully, for the purposes of this book, it appeared in the Kerryman as well in 1923. So if it hadn't been for that memoir, it would be impossible to write Bernard's story. Now, he has a great-grandniece, Kate Dillon, in England, who has studied his life a lot too. So
isn't it amazing, go back to journalism, you mentioned the Kerryman in 1922. At that stage in 22, people were reporting on his success in Kerry. He wasn't kind of a forgotten soldier or such. At that stage, people would have well known who he was, well, obviously, with the reporting.
It's very interesting you should say that, because as you say, it's a measure of his popularity. But I think when he won the Jubilee Stakes in 1906, there was actually a cardboard cutout of Bernard Dillon that was put in the window of Revington's shop, which is where Elvery's sports store used to be there. So you can tell, even at that stage, and people, there was a draw for it, people could buy a ticket, and they raffled it off. And there was a Miss Foley from Tralee who got a special prize because she sold the most tickets. So even at that age, 1906, if you can imagine the people of the town walking up and down Revington's, and there's a cardboard cutout of this young jockey in the window. Like, so even as far as 1906, and that sort of, his reputation held then, I think, in his hometown up until the 1923, when the editor of the Kerryman, whoever it was at that time, saw fit to serialise his memoir. Thankfully he did, because there wouldn't have been a book if he didn't, you know.
It's gone full circle with the Kerryman for you. Come here, when you sit down and do a book, I mean, some people write books about their own lives and some people write books about their heroes, but this was very different, because I presume this was a lot of research, and I suppose, like you said, you're leaning on what other people might have put their 30 years ago, 50 years ago, how many years ago. How hard is it to knit all that together, Stephen?
I found it hard. Well, then again, it depends. Like, his memoir was key, as I said. That was crucial, because another thing as well that's interesting, there were several biographies written about Mary Light in the years after, and most of the references to Bernard are sort of incidental and as an aside. So I didn't think that was fair to him, having read her biographies. I thought, you know, Bernard has to have his own voice. So when I started to read his memoir, now there is a little gap, there is gaps in here and there in it, I'll get back to it in a while, but I just felt it would be good to try and recreate his life and give him his own voice using his memoir, and which I think I did. And also, I was able to bring in the British newspaper archives were crucial, really, because they had regional and national reporters at the time that covered the race meetings and covered their social life. So it was an amalgamation of those two sources, really, his memoir and the secondary sources being the papers and all racing books and things like that. So that's how I kind of built it together. But it was tough, because I spent about a year alone just reading his memoir and rereading it to gain an understanding of him. And then I began to sort of dissect it and piece the story in together. But he was a colossal character. He really was. Like,
at any stage during that, did you say, "Mother of God, I prefer to be walking down Cottle Shelby and myself to my sweat rather than doing this"? I mean, does there come a time where you kind of just push on forward with it, or was there different stages where you found something new about it and you say, "God, that's fantastic," and it leads you down another kind of direction?
What struck me about the book, as you might say, about people say about football matches, it was a game of two halves. This definitely is a book of two halves, because the first half is about his racing career and how great he was as a jockey. But just when I was getting a bit fatigued with that, then the other side of his life came into it. I mean, he took to alcohol when he lost his jockey's license in 1913. By no means did it suit him. He became quite aggressive, was quite violent. He developed a terrible reputation in London at the time. And so that kind of led me to continue on the story then, because there really was two sides to Bernard Dillon. So that's when I did get a bit fatigued, to answer your question, after the racing side of it, that kept me going to the end. Then when I saw there was another side to this fella's life, you know. Yeah.
You're writing the Jekyll and the Hyde kind of story.
Yeah, absolutely, totally. Like,
and is that kind of more fulfilling as a journalist, that you're not painting the picture, because everybody has that kind of dark side and bright side and the whole lot, but at times people are portrayed fully, but you've kind of portrayed him in the full light of what you kind of found out about him?
Yeah, I definitely, and as I said to people who've asked me about the book since it was published, like, it's sad, it's humorous, it's dark at times, it's difficult reading at times, but I suppose like every story has its complementary and complex side, and Bernard's is definitely that. But I would urge people like who might not have an interest in racing just to give it a go and give it a chance, because there is a sort of a tragic love story underneath
it's
the whole
book.
It's
more than just a sports book, basically.
Oh, absolutely,
I mean,
yeah.
It's a book of a person's life.
It is. It
started
is.
Off this way, but, you know, the
Yeah, and it's a reminder as well for everybody, no matter how famous or good you get in life, we're all sort of vulnerable to self-destruction in a way, you know.
Absolutely, and of course, I suppose in today's world, you can replicate that with a lot of characters that you'll meet in different sporting fields and a lot. And we kind of mentioned Gaz at the start as well, Paul Gascoigne, which would be kind of good double. Come here, are you flogging it all around to Rahilly's fans, or are you walking down Rock Street with
us? I'm getting a bit of stick. I'm getting a bit of stick from that. I probably didn't factor in that much, but as a diehard rock man, I'm sort of.
I know, you're trying to kind of stretching across the pond a bit, are you?
It's like the old rock star for one night only. We'll shelve the football. But just on that, I suppose the launch, like, I mean, I thought I actually didn't have to think about it much. There really is no other place in Tralee that this book can be launched other than above in Cairns or Rahilly's. As I said, he was born just there, and it's without being too kind of philosophical about it, there's a nice feeling of bringing Bernard home on the night and relaunching his story to people that might not know about him, because it's quite ironic too that he would have ridden his ponies as a child right where that clubhouse is now and grew up in those streets. So there's a nice sort of a sentimental attachment.
That's not thousands of years ago either.
No, it's the thing about it, like, so there's a lovely sense of attachment, and I plan to make a presentation on the night to the club as well, a framed photograph of Bernard Dillon on the famous Mayor Pretty Polly. So hopefully he can hang on the wall then, long after the launch is over as well, you know, back where it all started.
God almighty, next thing you'll be taking over, Rahilly's.
Well, no, I definitely won't.
Branching off over there. Listen, Stephen, the very best of luck with it. It's a fantastic story. It's well told. And then kind of, Oisin Murphy's around at the moment.
Well, this is the thing. I sent a book off to Oisin the last day. I messaged him, and I said, he said, yeah, by all means, he'd love to read it, because I know Oisin from newspaper reporting, but It's ironic as well that the Derby is on Saturday on June 1st, which is exactly the same day that Bernard Dillon won it in 1910 on the 1st of June. So I said to Oisin, I hope he brings you luck. Yeah. You know, so I hope, like, I mean, seeing that this is the first man to win the Derby, please God, Oisin will be the second man soon to win the Derby from Kerry, you know.
From Kerry, man. Huh?
So it'll be great. So you never know. There might be a bit of luck in the book going to him.
And there might be another book out of it for you. We off with Oisin Murphy and the whole lot. Listen, Stephen, the very best of luck. It is June the 6th, which is Thursday. It's below in the club, which is Strand Road, obviously, at 7 p.m. And then you can buy it everywhere and anywhere.
Yeah, it's in Polymats at the moment. It will be in other bookstores in the coming days. And it's also at buythebook.ie as well. By the book, so it's available there.
Definitely, absolutely. And listen, we'll plug that a good bit through the summer as well. Donal, I'm like yourself, a big man United fan. The Omens were good on Saturday for the FA Cup. So the FA Cup, Man United have played in the 21 months. Man United scored first. They went on to win John in West Cork. Well, fair play to John Donal in West Cork. An awful lot more Man United fans turned out for the occasion as well. But like yourself, we were always there. Dick O'Sullivan and the legendary John Mitchell's man was a comment in there as well. And of course, that's off the back of Talk with Martin Skelly. And hi, Donald. Best wishes to Stephen Lumpy. He did a great job and will be hard to replace. He's a gentleman too, always willing to give his time on Radio Kerry. And that's Charles out there in You Never Walk Alone Land. And listen, we will talk about that and a little bit more after 7 o'clock.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home. Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m.
Now, the Cadbury FAI Kick Fit programme returns again this year into the Kingdom, of course, with the first, I suppose, social soccer programme for women kicking off at the home of Phoenix Sapphires, or Sapphires even, ground on Thursday the 6th of June. They decided to go a night later and get everything organised. I'm delighted to have in studio Ramona Keogh, who is representing everybody and anyone with the latest, the Kerry Sports Partnership.
Yes.
Absolutely, fair play. Aoife McDonald. She says she's a player. We'll put her to the test in a second. Dermot Riley looks after all the women in the club. That's a big title, isn't it? That's a strong title. And Peter Murphy looks after everything FAI here in Kerry. And congratulations to Peter on his new role as well, Development Officer, of course. Peter, first of all, let's start with you and turn it around, because obviously you're from the Cork side, so we're going to pick on you more often than not. How important are programmes like this to fit in? Because we look at the FAI and we all think elite player development and winning the World Cup and the whole lot. But this is an important block as well.
Absolutely, and it's obviously it's a massive part of my role in terms of grassroots and participation, you know, and providing opportunities for everyone and anyone to play our game. And women's and girls is a big, strong pillar in our strategy, and programs like this bring that to life in terms of offering opportunities for women to play our sport. So it's hugely important.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Ramona, you've been pushing women's sports for as long as I know you at this stage. The wheel is gathering a bit of pace. You know, things are going in the right direction. How pleasing is it when you come in and say, well, this is another club, you know, we've done Ballyhar, we've done Maestrigy, we've done other clubs, and now we're heading just outside Tralee?
Yeah, it's fantastic, and I think it's the growth of the programme over the last 3 years. It was something I jumped on straight away, you know, between the FAI and Kerry Recreational Sports Partnership, and it was an easy sell for me. We started off in Tralee, maxed out capacity, did a second one in Tralee, maxed out capacity, moved on to 2022, straight into Dingleby Rovers, sold out within 24 hours, and that summer then we had made a decision that we were going to roll another programme, did two back together in Maestrigy FC. And then last summer, Ballyhar Dynamos and closed out with Killorglin FC. So it's great to see over 250, you know, women actively playing. There's other clubs that have come on board in Kerry through, you know, the club development side of it. Some of the girls have come through the grassroots games that aren't playing competitively but want that more recreational side of it. So it's fantastic. It's absolutely thriving. So when I heard it was Phoenix Sapphires, I jumped in it straight away. Club that I've known for many years, great people, great club, and their history in underage soccer from the Kerry schoolboys and girls side of it. It's just more or less following the pathway for some of the girls moving on to League of Ireland and playing at 17s and 19s. But some people just stop at a particular particular gap and they just feel, I just want to play recreational, and this is a programme that's suited for everybody. Former players, returning players, people who are new in the area that just want to go out and play sport, and it's an ideal programme. And with Cadbury's coming on board as well with the last 2 years, it's a driving force in the promotion of it also.
And then, Dermot, you're doing your own thing back in Fianna Fáil, and then a programme like this comes along and it kind of regenerates the thing a bit?
Yeah, I mean, Fianna Fáil Fairs is in existence 30 years, you know, and up to about 8 years ago, it was all boys and a senior men's team. But 8 years ago, we started the girls' teams, and just the numbers have just absolutely skyrocketed. We've over 120 girls registered this year, you know, from under sevens all the way up to under 16s. And, you know, we've had some success, like brought on some players. I see Sive Dowling downstairs from the Gaynor Cup squad. She's an important member of under 14's team, you know. And
she's in the green room, we like to call that.
Green room, yeah, sorry.
VIP.
So, like, and we've had a good few Gaynor Cup representatives in our club over the years, you know. But I suppose what we would say, this is just another thing. It's fantastic that we can offer the club, and it's great that the FAI and Cadbury Kiffer come on board, and it just offers the opportunity for women that may have played or may have never played just to play the game, you know. But I suppose there is a thing that when you get to 16s, under 16s, the pathway then to get to possibly play senior ladies soccer, you know, that is not really there at the moment, but this is what it's all about too, at the side of it, that maybe some people come back to the soccer and say, yeah, there's enough interest for a senior league, you know, which absolutely would be great in if County Kerry could have a senior women's soccer league, you know.
At the rate Ramona's digging up the clubs anyway, I mean, she'd have eight teams straight away. She was come here, Aoife, you found your way back to the sport, or are new to the sport?
New to the sport. Oh, never played a game of soccer in my life.
Why is that?
I think I've been to the gym, I've done the COVID workouts, I've done it all, I've done all the different classes and everything, and I just felt I want something different, I want something outside, I want to meet people my own age. There's not as many, unless you're going to the gym or you're going to the classes, it's hard to meet people your own age. There are running clubs and stuff like that. And I just thought, it's something different. I know one or two people in it, I'll give it a chance. Went there, met lovely ladies and young girls, and it was all a bit of crack. And then the crack just keeps going and you keep having fun, and then you kind of get into the technicalities of it and you're learning a bit more about the game and saying, oh, this is why they cry when they get kicked in the shins, or this is why he takes to the floor when this happens. And then we had a few friendly games against Dingle and Ballyhare, and the competitive side starts to come out.
What was your first game like?
Daunting.
You get the jersey, you go out, it's 11 versus 11, there's an actual referee dressed up, blows a whistle. What happens next?
You just go for it. Sure, we're all in the same boat. You're against people who are in the same boat. You're all in the social soccer.
You find yourself then getting competitive. Do you find yourself?
Oh, straight away, like instantly. It's like a flick of a switch, and you just, it's not that you see red, but you're also like, oh my God, I actually have to play. This isn't pretend anymore. But it's, do you know what? You could bump into someone or give them a tackle, and it might be a bit of a rough one, but you both get up saying, oh, sorry, you know, keep going. And it's great, like, no matter win or lose, we've never had a sour loss or a sour anything. There's been no, like, nothing between any team, and we have a bit of a blitz coming up now Saturday week with a couple of different teams in Kerry, so it'd be nice if we could keep it going and keep the momentum going. And with the Cadbury Kickfish coming into it, it's nice to fill that gap in between the season ending and the season starting again, just to start getting numbers in, people interested, see what it's about, see, okay, well, I've never played soccer before, like myself, well, it's actually a bit of fun and it's not that serious. You don't have to be Messi or Ronaldo. Do you know, you don't have to
not
have
ever anyway
kicked a ball. No. it's all in the good fun.
You'll begin that. Peter, I mean, soccer in Ireland, I mean, a lot of people, you know, it's their number one serious sport, but it's a very easy sport to play leisurely as well. I mean, obviously you get a ball. I mean, the oldest was two jumpers in the corner and off you went, and you just kept playing until you were told to come in or get out of the yard or one of those other things. It's an easy enough sport to get into, but like, this is to draw people in, to give them that experience, so all of a sudden, I suppose maybe people don't want to play in the backyard anymore, they want to play in the field, and when they go in and they see the fantastic facilities, and all of a sudden, God, this is really professional and the whole lot. Is it all about that, building up the community, bringing people back?
I think that's definitely a big part of it. Like, as you mentioned there, we're very lucky in our sport is very accessible, and we have a lot of different avenues that we can offer our sport in. We have a lot of different programs, walking football, football for all, and so on, that we can kind of share our sport with as many diverse groups as we can. And this program is no different. You know, it's as Aoife said there, we're not looking for a million miles an hour stuff here. It's very much recreational, very much for enjoyment. And my own opinion and my own, I suppose, philosophy on it is we've three core aims in the programme, and that's for people to have fun, for people to get fit, and for people to play football. They're your three Fs, and if we can instill that in our 6-week programme, I think it'll be a great success. Like you say, it's an accessible sport, so if it's your first time or if it's your 50th time playing, it should be quite accessible to you.
I'm sitting at home tonight, Ramon, and after hearing Aoife, she's the professional now at this stage and playing the whole game, and I'm like, my God, am I going to come up marking her in the next game? But how's the programme breakdown?
So I suppose the first night it's a meet and greet. It's very relaxed. It's non-competitive in any way.
Is that the night where you kind of settle the nerves? Because, yeah, you know, like a lot of people say, oh, I signed up to that, but the date passed me by and I didn't really want to go down because I couldn't go on my own, and oh, I was afraid and all that kind of stuff. I imagine a lot of people kind of get lost in the fog that way. But this first night is who we are, this is what we're about. Mm. You know, there's no mad weights or there's no mad...
None whatsoever. We don't even talk about it. The only weights we carry is a few biscuits into the dressing room afterwards, calories. Yeah. But yeah, very relaxed atmosphere. You know, sometimes in itself, a lot of the parents, you know, the mothers and the sisters and the aunties, they're along the sideline dropping off the kids, and we're watching the kids play sport, or the nieces and the nephews. So it's a great opportunity to get out of the car and do something. Ideally, and you know, you want everybody to get involved, and there would be a lot of club officers, club committee members that would take to something like this more so than playing competitively, because competitively is not what it's about. So it's more the recreational side of it, meet and greet. The registration is done in advance. The details are with the FAI, so we've a good basis of who's coming in. If you haven't played before, don't worry about it. It's low impact the first night. It's going around the clubhouse, seeing what it's all about from a club structure, getting on the field and just having fun. You know, plenty of laughs, plenty of giggles, back into the dressing room after, back into the clubhouse, cup of tea in the hand, and that's where we start to build on it, then leaning towards the 6 weeks. Possibly on the 6 weeks, we'll bring in another club that would have formed the year before, and friendly kick around, bit of a laugh, bit of a banter. You've gone through all the clubs with us, so you know the story, and they're still going. The progression is very strong. I was talking to Jerry Fitzgerald during the week in Ballyhara Dynamos.
The least most competitive man ever.
Yes, exactly. That's a good way to describe him. But we maxed capacity at 24 last year, and we couldn't take any numbers. And as of last...
And that's a small area. I mean, that,
yeah,
that's
of last
a road
Thursday,
in the middle of the countryside,
they're
basically
up to 38.
Wow.
Yeah, so even these were participants that missed the first part of it for whatever reasons. But yeah, the growth is there. It's all about the fun factor as well. And ideally, if you can, you know, retain the players, you know, there is areas for them to get involved in the club as well too and help out. And that's where Fianna Sapphire is then thrive off the back of it.
You'll have to build an extra field with the amount of people that are heading out.
Elections are coming.
The planning will be up. Yeah. Mayor Dimmert, the other side of course keeping a soccer club going or any sports club is the amount of volunteers you need and the amount of help, and you can only have so many players, but you need volunteers and all. A programme like this, I mean, a lot of people will get involved that might have never been involved in the club before, might, you know, siphle their way off and never know onto committees and help you and do all that kind of stuff as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the amount of work that goes into putting all those underage teams on the pitch every week, you know, and it's all voluntary and stuff. So absolutely, even already with the social soccer group, some of the women that are involved there are getting involved in the club as well, you know, and you never know, it might lead on to coaching. We would love to have more female coaches with our girls teams, you know. So if the interest is sparked by this programme and they wanted to talk to Peter then about, you know, doing a PDP1 or something and get involved on the coaching side, it'd be a huge help.
Yeah. And of course it is one of the progressions, Peter. I mean, obviously, I mean, people come to a stage where they kind of stop playing and they don't want to leave the sport. They want to stay involved in some kind of connection, the whole lot. And there is that coaching, and you know, maybe there's even officiating and the whole lot. There's plenty out there that can keep you involved.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's something that we always look at and support people with. And I know it's something that we're looking at supporting again this year. Is the women that come through the program? Can we get them on a coaching course? Can we get them on a refereeing course? And increase our number of volunteers and upskill the players as well, which is really, really important. So yeah, it's a key part of it, for sure.
Aoife, when you retire, which you won't be retiring anytime soon, would you prefer to be a coach or a referee?
Oh, a coach. Stand on the sideline. I don't want to be in the middle of it. No.
Absolutely. Come here, Ramona, final question to you. I mean, since we've kind of charted the success, I suppose, we started with one club and you have a number of clubs, and like you said, you have seven or eight. What would be the game plan, or what would be the nice ending to this? Obviously maybe a league, or is it maybe a sociable league, or, as you know, Dermot was saying, that there's no kind of bridge in between 16 and senior at the moment. If you turn over a couple of extra senior players here, you might have clubs and the whole lot. Is that kind of the end product, or is the end product maybe even bigger than that? Is it just get more people involved in the sport, more people enjoying it, more people getting fit, more people having WhatsApp groups and having a bit of crack and all that kind of stuff?
Definitely for me it's retention. I think if you can keep them in the club environment, we've seen, you know, the wonderful job that the clubs are doing in Kerry, in the Kerry Schoolboys and Boys League, in, you know, bringing the girls to a certain level, and you want that pathway to follow, and the clubs can only do so much. But with a programme like this, it's retention, and Ballyhard Dynamos is your prime example of that. Last year we hosted a blitz over in Tralee, so it was St Brendan's Park, and they did a fabulous event over in Tralee that they all came in together. It was a charitable event. In 2 weeks' time, I want to wish Dingle Bay Rovers the very best of luck. They're hosting a blitz, and they're invited teams outside of Kerry as well too. So it's a big day out.
They're gone for the big sharks.
They're gone for the big sharks. Yeah, and as they're making a trip down, and they'd be fairly handy. But you know, it's all down to the club environment and everything that the lads are doing, you know, to keep them involved. And it's a very exciting program. And there's plenty of information on Kerry Recreational Sports Partnership website, and through the FAI as well. FNAIT are putting it out on social media. So from all angles, it's free of charge. Get involved, get registered, get into FNAIT Sapphires next Thursday night before it all kicks off.
And you have a few other clubs outside the door. Now, quick question to you, Peter, before we wrap up. How many Gaynor Cup players can you fit in the studio?
I say you get the whole squad over anyway, for sure. That's the, I don't know how many you have today.
At the rate they're passing, you know, we'll say hello to them all.
We'll find out.
Listen, that's the Cadbury FAI Kick Fit programme, Thursday the 6th. Where do I sign up?
You sign up online. Registration is online, so check it out on Kerry Recreational Sports Partnership. The FAI and FNAIT Sapphires will be putting it out on their social media platforms as well.
Fair play. Everyone and anyone welcome.
All Man United fans as well. Fantastic.
There's loads of us now.
Great weekend.
The very best of luck. After a break, we talk Gaynor Cup.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home. Breaking down the weekend's sporting action. This is Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now, the Gaynor Cup takes place, of course, in June the 3rd to the 7th, and what has become kind of an annual treat now at the moment. We kind of normally start to invite the manager, Owen, be here on his own with a couple of players, but unfortunately we brought the whole lot of them this evening, and they're all looking in. Hello, girls. Obviously can't hear him at the moment, but we'll turn on that mic too in a second. But in studio at the moment, of course, we have Owen O'Mahony, delighted to have him on board again, the management, and we have three of the players playing. Of course, we are joined by Clodagh Quirk from Listroy. Yeah, but she's actually MEK, of course, and she's the captain, and congratulations to you. And of course, we're joined by Saoirse Brosnan, who says she's from Dingle, but we all know she's from Lisbon, and Maya Walska from Listowel Celtic. Absolutely. Delighted to join you. Owen, new team, new squad, new year, new expectations, new excitement, new jerseys.
That's it, yeah.
New faces.
New faces, yeah. Switched allegiance to the girls this time around, yeah. So, enjoying it and looking forward to the week ahead.
Yeah. Have you a lot planned and prepared? Because obviously you had your big PR night back in the Golden Nugget a couple of weeks ago, and I suppose it's the first time that the media get to see the team and the excitement and the whole lot off the field. But I presume on the field you've been busy.
Yeah, I've been busy, yeah. Look, we were asked to get involved there, I suppose, in March, and hold trials, and I suppose since March and up to now, we've done about 20 sessions, and including in those 20 sessions were 7 kind of trial days, you know. So we give every girl, you know, that came in for the trials every opportunity, you know, to show us what they
can
do.
And of course, the growth in the game is so much that there's more and more girls playing now. So obviously, those trials get harder and harder every year because there's more to see and more players, and the quality is getting better all the time.
It is, without doubt. Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic to see the level of talent in Kerry, you know, and I suppose they're being inspired by, you know, I suppose from the top down, you know, the national team, and then you have Kerry FC now with an under-17 girls team as well, you know. So, there's great inspiration there now for young girls, and they're all playing the game. Even I was at a couple of finals there, the 14s finals the weekend, and there was a 10-year-old girl, you know, she came on for Dingle Bay Rovers, and to see her running around, you know, and like, it's fantastic. It's brilliant. It's brilliant to see.
They're young back there, aren't they?
Yeah,
good stuff. Clodagh Kirk, the captain, congratulations. Was that a nice honour when you went home and told the gang at home in Listroy, yeah, you know, I'm going to captain the Gaynor Cup?
Yeah, well, I kind of told Mum and she didn't believe me until, like,
oh,
the message
God.
Went
Mom
out.
Didn't believe you. Did you have to hear her 2 or 3 times?
Yeah, once or twice, like.
Oh, my God. When she did believe you, though, I presume she was like, oh, my God, we're going to UL.
Well, we kind of knew that when we got picked for the squad, and we knew it would be a long week ahead of us, but when she heard I was captain, she was kind of unbelieved. You know,
yeah. Were the neighbours around taking selfies and photographs already, or you have to wait till bring home the Gaynor Cup maybe?
No, sure. When I went home, like, my auntie was up at the house already, so when I told Mum, she overheard. So, and then the news spread around the 4 houses where we live around. So
auntie went house to house to tell everybody else, is it?
Exactly.
She's a great auntie, fair play. Saoirse Brosnan, the news went around Dingle fairly lively, I presume, or Lisbole anyway, definitely.
Yeah.
What part of Lisbole are you from?
Menard.
Oh, wow. Okay. Real country part?
Yeah, it is.
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah.
How does somebody from Menard in the country part of Lisbole get to play soccer?
I don't know. I'm just practicing out against the wall.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Can you remember your team, of course, is Dingle Bay. Can you remember your first game with Dingle Bay?
No, I started when I was young with the boys.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, and worked my way up.
Was that a good start, was it?
It was, yeah.
They didn't kind of take it easy on you, did they?
No, physical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you were able to manage back in Lisbole. And then you headed off back to Dingle Bay then, and then bounced on to the Kerry team. What was it like when you got picked for the Kerry team, the Gaynor Cup?
Oh, I was delighted. I don't know, I didn't think I'd get picked, but when the thing was sent out, I was delighted to see my name on it.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a special moment, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Wow, my name is on it, and the name is Saoirse Brosnan. And of course, the name of Maya Walska was on it too, from Listowel Celtic. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Were you shocked when you saw your name on it?
Yeah.
It was like, wow. And who did you tell the news to?
Well, Mum found out first, then she told Dad.
Right.
And then everyone kind of found out off Kerry, so I just told my friends.
Okay. Were they hugely excited? What did Dad say?
Dad wasn't surprised. He thought I'd get on it anyways.
Oh, he was real dead. He was ready to knock on the manager's door if you weren't on it, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of deads that are like that. Good stuff. What position in the field do you play?
I can't play anywhere. I've played striker, left wing, centre mid.
Okay, so you've travelled all around, but you're most comfortable in striking?
Yeah, I guess now.
Good stuff. What's it like playing with Listowel Celtic?
Oh, that's a tough one. It's tough to play with Listowel.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
They put a lot of work in there, don't
yeah.
they? And of course, Listowel is the home club of Savannah McCarthy, who travelled away out of there and became an Irish international and everything, which was fantastic. And of course, Dominic up there still?
Yeah, he trains me.
Oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah.
He's never stopped. He must be at 109 now, is he?
Yeah, he trains about 5 teams, I'd say, in the girls.
He's a fantastic man, to be fair to him, and he's a pure Listowel Celtic man as well. And long before it was popular, I'd say, Owen, he was supporting the women's game as well. Come here, how important is it that we have the women's, we have the Kennedy Cup, which everybody say, that's the boys. But in the last number of years, Gaynor has become a thing, and with all the media promoting it, people kind of understand now that that's the outlet as well.
Yeah, they do, and I think it's across all codes, like you see it across all codes now, you know. Girls, women, you know, the participation is through the roof, you know, with all sports, and rightly so. I mean, it's high time that's come about, and you know, it's brilliant, and it helps clubs you know, at grassroots level as well, because, you know, there's more women getting involved, you know, more young girls getting involved, taking an interest in coaching as well and doing their badges. So what's there for the boys is there for the girls. They can see it and, you know, they believe in it now, you know. So that's, I think it's brilliant. I think it's great. And that's why, it's one of the reasons I got involved, you know, when I was asked. I didn't hesitate. I thought, like, this is a great opportunity, you know, to get involved in, like, you know, so... yeah, I think,
and it's a county jersey as well, and you're representing Kerry at a national tournament. Clodagh, Saoirse, and Maya, we'll give you a break, will we?
Yeah,
we'll substitute you. Which tree do you want to bring in?
Leona,
we'll write Leona down. You there, Leona?
Yeah, and Ava Feely.
And Ava Feely. Oh, she has two names anyway, Ava Feely. And who else?
We'll bring in Maeve Kennedy as well.
And yeah, Maeve Kennedy. Wow, we'll talk to them after this break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home. From the sidelines to the stand, Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk this evening until 8 o'clock with Donal Barry. And of course we're here with the Gaynor Cup team. And when I mean team, we literally have every last one of them nearly. And of course the games take place between the 3rd and the 7th of June. It's a huge championship of course, and Kerry are going strong under the leadership of Owen O'Mahony. And we've replaced our three players with three more players, because obviously it's about how many we can get through as quickly. And we're delighted to invite Maeve Kennedy from Kemp.
Yeah.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
But you're really from Kiel, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah. How does somebody from Kiel get on the Kennedy Cup team?
Don't know.
Yeah, you're that good?
That's it.
Good stuff. When did you start playing soccer?
I don't know, maybe five, six years ago.
Oh my God. And who were you playing with at the time?
Camp.
All the camp. Camp's a serious enough outfit in ladies football, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of work in it, and there's always kind of somebody on the team, or two or three sometimes, and the whole lot. Is there a couple more of you there?
One more. Eva Callaghan.
So you came as a pair this year?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what's it like, you know, when you're looking at girls, maybe last year's girls and the girls the year before, and they're all from Kemp and they've all played in the Gaynor Cup, and now you get picked?
Yeah, it's great. It's a great opportunity to go and play, especially under Owen. And it's a great opportunity. It's very exciting.
Is it kind of cool, though, is it? Like, you know, when the rest of your friends are going somewhere else, you're putting on your Kerry schoolboys and girls top and you're heading off to training.
Yeah,
to represent a county team.
Yeah, it's very good. Like, they're all off doing other things and I'm here playing for Kerry.
I know, yeah. Yeah, great stuff to talk about. And come here, when you go to training, obviously, I mean, it's gas because you meet new friends, don't you?
Yeah.
Or would you have known a lot of these girls from playing soccer against them?
I've, like, always known them because we've been playing against each other for, like, maybe 3 or 4 years. Like,
oh, wow.
But now I'm getting to know them personally.
So now from tackling one of them, you have to pass to one of them?
Yeah.
Is that a big jump, is it?
Not really, sure, like.
Go on. What club don't you like out of all the rest of them?
Well, the weekend I just got beaten by Park.
Have we got a Park person? We have a rake of Park. We'll bring them in next.
Yeah.
We'll cross-examine them. Leona Meany?
Yep.
God, thank God I got that. My writing's desperate. Of course, you're from Ballybunion.
Yep.
Who are you playing with?
Listowel.
Dominic brought you into it, yeah?
Yeah.
Good stuff. What's it like to train with Listowel?
It's good, yeah. It's like, it's very, like, high and very, like, strict.
Oh, strict?
You have to be very, like, good. But then, like, you've Dominic who's strict, and then you've PJ who, like,
isn't
very
strict.
Chill. Yeah.
He's very chill.
Yeah.
Dominic will have to work on his very chill bit, will he?
Yeah.
Come here. What's it like playing soccer?
Fun. I've loved it since I was a child, and just, I've always enjoyed it. Like, it's always been my happy place to go and, like, clear my head and, like, you know.
Wow. That's a very adult answer, isn't it? But obviously, it's a great answer as well. When you're there and you play soccer, like, are you happiest just at the back wall, kicking it off the back wall, headering and the whole lot? You don't necessarily need a big crew or a team with you as well. You're just on the ball all the time.
Yeah.
Wow. Has she got skill? Oh, yeah, she's got the skill. Good stuff. Ava Feely?
Yeah.
How are you?
Good.
Where are you from?
Abbeydorney.
Oh, wow. Home of hurling and ladies football and also soccer. Who do you play with?
For soccer?
Yeah.
Listowel.
Oh, you travelled up the road as well?
Yeah.
When you got the news that you were on the Gaynor Cup team, how was it like in your house?
It was very, like, because, see, I didn't think I was going to get on it, because, see, I'd missed a few of the trials and I was sick for some, but when I got on it, it was very exciting.
My God. So the news came and you were like, oh, I'm going.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you're going, then you look down the list and you see friends from your club and the whole lot. Is that exciting when you know that I'm not on my own, I'm with 3 or 4 of my buddies from my team?
Yeah, it's very good, because like the likes of Leona, she only came into Listowel this year, but we've gotten so close already, and Gaynor, we're just going to get closer.
Brilliant. You're really planning for it, aren't you? What's the training like, Leona, for the Gaynor Cup?
very good. Like,
is it chill or is it strict or is
like,
it?
It's good because like we can also have like good giddy times, but we can also be serious and like get along with each other. Like it's not all like messing around, but we can take serious too.
And is that the important part of it, that you can go enjoy, have fun, but yet there's a switch at the back that says that, yeah, this is kind of serious too, lads, you know, because there's girls from all over Ireland on a field somewhere tonight in Wexford or Carlow or Leash or Dublin or the whole lot, and they're all training for the same thing. So there has to be a time where, I don't know, you practice your corners, you practice your restarts, you practice your defence or the whole lot. And is that switch easy just to turn on and off?
Yeah, suppose, like.
Gee, that was a very short answer for a real question, wasn't it? Owen, what's it like to work with a bunch of characters at this age? Because it's funny, because obviously you have to have the fun and the enjoyment, which is huge, important, but there is the serious side to it too.
Yeah, look, you're trying to strike the balance with them, you know. It's a lot different coaching girls as it is with boys. I've coached girls as well at club level and things, you know, and there are different challenges, you know, involved in it, you know. But look, it's a county setup, and you know, you want to prepare them, so it's just striking a balance, really. And I suppose sometimes you forget with these girls, you know, you look at them and you think maybe the physical age is an under 15, but they're only 13 years of age, you know, these girls, you know, so they're young, you know. So I suppose it's trying to deliver that detail to them, you know, in a manner in which they'll understand it, you know, and a lot of it would be visual. Look, a lot of them are, you know, visual, they have to see it, you know. You know, because you can talk and talk and talk and it become very boring, you know. So no, it's challenging, you know, but very enjoyable. I have to say they're a pleasure to coach. You know, they're really taking on the detail we're giving them, you know, over the past 20 weeks or so. And you know, hopefully they can execute some of it down in UL now, you know. So.
Or else you'll be the new Eric Ten Hag. You'll be gone cup final day, will you?
I wouldn't say that. But look, they're prepared, they're organised, they'll go down there, they'll be competitive, and I want them to enjoy it as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a brilliant
and
experience.
And when you're the manager of a team that's under 13, I mean, look, it's important. Winning is there, it's in the background. We like to progress, we like to get out of our group, we like to be go as far as we can. But where do you strike the balance? I mean, obviously you're bringing, I don't know, 19 Park players, and you have the rest to carry with you as well. I mean, but there's obviously that balance where it's a squad game and it can't be the first 11 all the time, and that. Is that difficult, or do they buy into it? Do they understand it?
Yeah, it is. Look, everybody wants to play, you know, and I mean, the max you could take down is 20 players. Look, we decided we take 18, mm-hmm. you know, and we're hoping that we can strike a balance then, you know, in terms of game time as well, because, you know, I mean, you want to play it again or cup, you know, so like we'll definitely be striving to, you know, give as much game time as possible to all the girls, you know. And look, okay, we want to be competitive and win, you know, where possible, but once they're doing the right things, applying themselves, playing the detail we're giving them, you know, and competing on the pitch, I mean, that's a good foundation, and the results will take care of themselves.
And of course, it's the first step of their journey in a long way. Obviously, we're talking about the Kerry under-17s a couple of years' time. We're hoping that they'll wash through there and maybe on to international teams and maybe even cross-channel and the whole lot, because the sport is huge now again.
Yeah, I tell you, look, there's serious talent, you know, and this group of girls here I can see, you know, and I see girls there, you know, that are committed and to that level of excellence, and they will push on and they'll strive for that, you know. There's no doubt about it. I can see it. You can see it already. So I think it's brilliant. Like, you know, and look, it's nice for us as coaches if we've impacted in a small way, you know, in their learning and in their development, and hopefully, you know, we will produce one or two more players, you know, that can push on to a high level. I mean, why not? They can see it now, as I said before, you know. They can see it, so they're believing in it now, you know. They can see, you know, the top players.
Yeah. Maeve Kennedy, are the whole of Kiel ready to go to UL?
I'd say so.
You have a lot of them going, surely, have you? Who is going?
Right now, I don't think anyone really.
Ah, stop.
No, I don't think so.
What? We'll put a big call out here on Terrace Talk this evening. We want the whole of Kiel up on UL watching you.
Hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully someone will come.
Ah, God, don't be. That sounds awful said. Hopefully somebody will come, huh? You get a few extra supporters in this tool and shout for me, will you?
I have, yeah.
You'll do that.
I have family playing for another team up in Gamer, so I'll ask them to support me as well.
Oh my God, aren't you great, aren't you? Huh? You're lost. Come here, who was your biggest influence?
Owen and my brother.
Oh, Goy. What's your brother's name?
Stephen.
Is he good?
He is, yeah.
Is he critical? Does he give out after matches and say you should have passed that or you missed that?
He just tells me what I could have done better instead of giving out to me.
But not often, obviously, because you that can't happen too often, can it?
No.
No, good stuff. One last shot for you, girls. We'll give it to Maeve. What three more will I put in next time? Go Grace. On, Maeve. Who?
Grace.
Taylor.
And Sophia.
Well, we'll talk to them after this break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home. Breaking down the weekend's sporting action. This is Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. Donal Barry here until 8 o'clock. And of course, we're coming down to time. The time is running out fast, of course. And we're looking at the Gaynor Cup as the Kerry side we have in. And it's not a lie, listeners. We literally have nearly the full team inside. And we've been joined by Grace, Taylor and Sophia, all of Park, because obviously you wouldn't mix with any other club, would you?
No.
Good stuff. Taylor, come here. Talk to us about your first soccer match with Park.
Well, I started off with Dynamo's the boys.
Oh, yeah. The boys, okay, very good,
there was
yeah.
No girls team, and then I started off with the under-10s for Park, and I just remember scoring a goal and we won 12-0.
Oh my God, we won't say who you beat 12-0, okay, we just forget about that straight away. But can you remember the excitement of getting that first goal?
Yeah, I remember I just jumped up in the air. Nobody came near me, but I was just happy for myself.
Oh, you're celebrating your own.
Yeah.
It was obviously the 12th goal, was it?
I don't know, I can't remember.
Oh my God. Grace, what's it like to play with teammates on the Gaynor Cup?
It's good. It's good to have people that you know already coming in.
Did you know kind of, when he found out or when Grace found out, did you get on the phone straight away and say, oh, I hope Taylor's in it or I hope such a person is in it?
Yeah.
So that makes it easier, isn't
it? Yeah, it does.
Is it harder then that way when there's so many Park girls, and I don't know how many Park girls or anything, but there's three of you here, that when you go to training, is it easier to mix with the MEK gang, or is it easier to mix with the Listowel gang, or do you kind of all know each other fairly well outside of football?
We kind of all know each other anyway, like we know from playing against each other, but it's good to mix with other people as well, so.
Yeah. It's nice to hang around with a few cultures, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, poor fellas. Girls, come here to me. Talk to me, Sophia, about getting picked. Can you remember getting the good news?
Yeah, I remember when my mom told me that I got picked on the squad.
What did your mom say?
She was like, oh, you got picked. And I was like really happy and I was texting my friends that I made it.
She was a bit more dramatic than that, was she? You got picked.
Yeah, she was really happy for me.
Yeah.
That I made it.
I presume family support is huge, Taylor, isn't it? Like, when you get picked, I mean, you want to share the excitement with all your family and your friends and your neighbours and everybody to find out. I mean, how exciting is that moment?
Yeah, it's very exciting. I remember when my mum found out, she texted everybody in my family and they were all just congratulating me. They were just very happy for me.
Oh my God. And you have a huge family, have you?
Yeah, I do. It's very big.
She was on the phone all evening.
Yeah, she was.
And what was it like for yourself?
It was good. My mum told everybody straight away and they were all very happy.
Oh my God. Do all your moms and dads go to kind of training and drive you to the matches and all that? What's that like, Taylor?
Well, yeah, they all come to my games. My sisters, they all come support me. And my dad's one of the coaches for my Park team as well, so he has to be there anyway.
God, he has no free night at all, has he? Yeah,
no.
No. What's it like when you're having your dad on the sideline as well? Because it's not something uncommon, because obviously, I mean, the amount of people that get involved want the best for their family and their sons and their daughters and the whole lot, and they train them the best they can. But what's it like when dad's on the sideline and, I don't know, maybe one of the other Park girls are kind of like saying, oh, God.
Well, it's their opinion, but I mean, I like having him on the sideline because he can tell us what to do. Like, he makes us better and he's just there to support us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he excited for you being in the Gaynor Cup?
Oh, yeah, he's very excited for me.
Absolutely. What's the training been like for the Gaynor Cup for you?
Yeah, well, there's standards up there for us anyway, and we just have to keep training and we're prepared to go up there now and just give it our best.
Mm. Have you played a couple of challenge matches and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, against Limerick Desmonds. We've played a few games against him and then one against Cork.
Yeah, so you're getting a kind of a feel for the competition against other counties already.
Yeah, we are.
Owen, hopefully we haven't drawn any of those two teams in the group stage that you played as the friendlies. Explain how the competition works. Is it eight groups of four or is it six groups?
There's slightly less. We're in a group of four. There are maybe one or two groups of three. But it's played across Monday to Friday. So on the Monday, we have Inishowen on the Monday.
Oh, wow. That's a long way away.
Yeah, that's the first yeah. game. Yeah, yeah.
At least it's in Limerick, I suppose. It's not in Limerick.
Yeah, exactly. and on the Tuesday, then we've two games. We've Clare and Sligo Leitrim. So one in the morning, And then one in the evening. So
how would you prepare as a coach for two games in the one day? I mean, it seems a lot, but obviously it's the nature of the competition and every team is in that kind of circle as well. But you have your team in the morning, you have your break, and then you get going again.
That's exactly it. Yeah. I mean, it's a half an hour side. Look, that's why you have a squad of 18 players, you know. It's where, like, on the second day you'll be utilising your squad, you know, and you'll be trying to keep players fresh and still trying to be competitive, you know. But there's a strong group of girls here, and we trust them, and we know they'll deliver a good performance up there in the UL.
And obviously with the players, I mean, obviously there's a management committee. I mean, you don't pull the horse by yourself. You have a lot more with you in the background.
No, I have a good crew. Thomas,
very shy fellas.
Yeah,
girls.
Thomas Costello is a goalkeeping coach and assistant. Danny Diggins, assistant, and Saoirse Kelly, another assistant. She's played at the Gaynor Cup herself, and they have a heavy involvement in it. Her family, Saoirse and her other two sisters, they played there as well.
And she's hiding out there.
She's keeping the tradition going in her family.
Come in here, Saoirse. We'll talk about your Gaynor Cup experience. Come on, we've only got five minutes. It's not a big walk. We'll talk, because that's kind of unique.
Very unique. We went there and
came back. Obviously, very quickly before we get to Saoirse, I mean, the week doesn't happen by itself. There's so many people that you need to kind of thank along the way as well.
Yeah, look, we'd like to thank, obviously, the Kerry School Boys and Girls League for everything, all the support they're giving us, you know, and in particular then our sponsors, John Fleming, Killarney, Amber, Costcutter, Daily Super Value Killarney as well. Mm-hmm. Came on board there with kit sponsorship, bag sponsorship, and some essentials above there as well.
It's all very important, all very accepted. Saoirse, that was a huge... You're part of management and you're a former Gaynor player.
Yeah.
Tell me about your Gaynor experience first before we go to the management. When was it?
I can't even remember. It was a good few years ago anyway.
It wasn't in the black and white days. Whatever. What was it like for you getting picked? Because we obviously asked that question. I mean, back in those days, was it an email, a phone call, or some guy called your door? Or?
It was a lot different back then because there wasn't as many girls playing. So it was kind of whoever turned up to the trials back then kind of made it.
What club were you?
I'm currently LB Rovers, but I grew up playing with the Stoll Celtic.
Oh my God. They sold you, did they?
Yeah.
With LB Rovers.
Great signing.
Good stuff. But what was the excitement like at the time? Because it doesn't change. I mean, whether there was 35 cut down to 11, whatever. You go home in the car and you got picked. What was that like?
Oh, we were all buzzing at the time, do you know. I remember we had players like Fiona Bradley, who's gone on to play with Treaty United now. And like they're top-notch players, you know.
Savage, yeah.
And you were playing beside them. And it was amazing.
Absolutely. And what was the experience like yourself when you went up? I mean, obviously, with UL, you played your couple of games and the whole lot. What was it like playing at the standard, you know, going from your club, all of a sudden it's Kerry, and now you're playing Gaynor Cup? What was the level like?
Oh, it was a much higher standard. It was tough playing multiple games over a short few days, but we were getting our sleep in beforehand and all that, so...
And are they the sort of things now that when you're in the management, you're looking back and you're saying to them, this is what we need to do, because I've been here before, I kind of understand. Because obviously the Park crowd are so excited to go, but they haven't been here before. But they do need somebody in the dressing room to say, hold on here a second, girls, this is what we need to do.
Yeah, you have to keep yourself down to earth as well. You know, you can't be getting too over your head. You know, so
it's kind of game by game, hour by hour, and the whole lot, and we'll see what we do at 12 o'clock and 2 o'clock and a lot. How excited is it to be part of the management?
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah. I love it.
Is it different from playing? Obviously it is. I mean, you're on the sideline, but I mean, obviously there's a bit about you, like, God, I'd love to play with this gang, or, you know, I'd love to be inside there, or God, that pass was ideal for me. But you're on the sideline, you're looking at it, and now all of a sudden at half time you're discussing to players what's the right move to make and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, I love it, passing on information I've gotten from my old coaches and my current coaches to the future generations.
Oh, almighty. She sounds brilliant, doesn't she?
Yeah.
What's it like having that insight? Because obviously, I suppose that there's a lot of kind of men involved and there's a lot of women involved, but it's rare enough to have somebody coming through the gap that I've played this before, I kind of understand that. And even though she thinks it's in the black and white days, it obviously wasn't the black and white days.
No, that was a big factor in bringing Saoirse into the setup as well, because she played there, you know, so, and she can be a big influence and help with the girls as well, you know, from a player's perspective, you know, little details there that, like, you know, we probably wouldn't be able to I suppose, maybe understand, you know. So, like, that's why we brought Saoirse in, and the girls love her, and she takes part in the sessions as well, and, you know, creates that good, fun environment, you know, too, that the girls were talking about earlier, you know. So, all striking a bit of balance, that's what we're trying to achieve, you know, and I think we've achieved that, you know.
Is she hard to Mark Taylor, is she?
Well, I was injured, so I haven't been up against her yet.
How about you, Grace? Have you tried to tackle Saoirse? Oh, sorry, I keep looking the wrong way, Grace.
Same goal, so no, I'd be a bit away from her.
You're safe, okay. So it's just list yourself, Sophia.
Oh, yeah, she's hard to mark, like.
Right. You've tried to tackle her, or are you kind of keep hold, do you?
I have tried to tackle her.
Oh, right. God almighty. Is there a few girls in this team that you'd be well afraid of?
Oh, yeah, there's a good few of them.
Is there? Has the standard kind of gone up a little bit since your time, even? You know, you mentioned that back in the day there was kind of less players playing. Doesn't mean the quality was any worse as such, but there's more players, there's more clubs. I presume with that, you know, the girls are playing a lot more matches as well. So has the skill level maybe gone up a bit?
Yeah, it has. There's much higher intensity. The skills are much improved since back when I was playing it. And, yeah.
But sure, there was still winning and losing back in your day as well.
Yeah.
Did you win much with Listowel Celtic?
Yeah,
we won a nice bit. A
couple of bits, but not too much either.
All right, well, she shared it around as well. She said, that's okay as well. Owen, finally, we're in the last minute. If you sat down now this very moment and wrote down what your targets were and kind of put in an envelope and the whole lot, and we're not having a winning or losing, what would you like to get out of it for this group of players? And basically, is it the journey? People say it's always the journey and the whole lot. But I mean, you have a great gang. They're all very happy and the whole lot. They're well trained, ready to go. But like outside of that, outside the results, what would be nice for you?
Yeah, I just think it's the life experience, you know, that a tournament like this can bring to this group of young girls. And it's something they'll never forget. I mean, you know, I played at the Kennedy Cup and I never forget it, you know, and I made great friends at the tournament, and they're people who I still meet to this day, you know, and it's something they'll have, you know, for the rest of their lives, you know. So it's a week to enjoy, it's a week to go down, you know, like the girl said there, you know, time to be serious and a time to have the bit of fun, and they're striking the balance in training, they're striking the balance you know, in that regard. So they'll do the same down in up in UL. And look, yeah, we just want them to enjoy the experience, be competitive at all times when they're on the pitch, and look, see where it takes them, you know.
Taylor, quick fire round, 10-second questions. Who's going to be the first to score a goal?
Maya.
Oh my God, pressure on Maya. Who's the first to get a yellow card?
Leona?
Oh my God, that's harsh. Who's the first person who might get more than a yellow card?
Sophie.
Sophie, serious. Keep the feet down, Sophie, and you, okay? And will we have a winning captain?
Yeah.
Of course we'll have a winning captain. And she'll be back in here the week after with the cup. And the whole of Listroy with you. I'm sure you can bring Keel as well if you want, and the one from Ballybunion, and we have Park, and we have Listowel, and we have the whole lot, and we wish you the very best of luck, because you are truly a county team, and it's great to have you, and you bring great energy, great fun, and great excitement. And you see that woman over there, Mary Conroy, Galway United, 1955 striker. She's going to take a talk to us after the break at 8 o'clock. Stay tuned for a great night. Donal Barry, we'll do it all again next week. Big thanks to Keane, and big thanks to Ivan as usual.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.